Hey everyone, this is Caleb Mansfield, and I'm here with my colleague Erica Robinson on the Aptivate podcast by Remerge, where we talk all things mobile marketing. How are you doing today, Erica?
Doing great. It's a beautiful day in San Francisco.
It is, and thank you everyone for listening. This is our very first podcast. We're here with our good friend Sam Bruns, ex-MZ and expert at mobile marketing. How are you doing today, Sam?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Of course, and thank you for being our very first guest. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Shows how important you are. So just to get started, kind of, if you could just explain your background a little bit to us and all the listeners, where you come from, how you started, things like that, we can go from there.
Yeah, I ended up in marketing really just through some serendipity. I started out as a telemarketer for a few years, and the first job I got offered that wasn't telemarketing was working and doing direct mail to Canada. And so I started sending out junk mail to people and moving to spam mail from there. And at one point, I made the transition into mobile marketing. And it's great. I love it.
That's awesome. Can you explain a little bit about what you did at MZ, what your role was day to day, also some ad hoc stuff you might have done?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked at MZ. I specialized in DSPs, Remerge as a DSP, demand side platform. I did a little bit of work on affiliate networks as well. I was also a lead analyst for Cognit, which is their agency arm. So I had a little bit of opportunity to learn about a lot of different types of channels and how they kind of fit into the overall strategy.
Great. And diving in now to the main topic, fraud. I know you're an expert here. Yeah, fraud. It's all the buzz. How do you define that?
Yeah, great question. Well, probably a good question for you guys. I haven't seen much fraud from Remerge.
Thanks for the plug, Sam.
Fraud is basically when someone is deliberately gaming KPIs and lying to you. It's when someone tells you you're getting one thing and you're getting something completely different. So that can be done in a number of ways. But as long as your partner's honest with you about what you're getting, it's not fraud.
Awesome. And I know you mentioned that, you know, you haven't seen much from Remerge. We are a retargeting company. But for people out there that might not know the difference between fraud with retargeting, with UA, is there even fraud for retargeting? Could you just kind of go into the difference between it, what you've seen on this fraud side with retargeting and UA?
Yeah. So the reason I don't think there's much fraud in retargeting yet is because there's not as much money in it. The amount of money that goes to UA right now is so much bigger of a slice of the pie, and people are being paid on cost per install. So there's a lot of ways to game it. Retargeting is a little bit harder to fake. You can't just create new devices. You can't do a lot of the tricks that already exist in UA. And then there's less money that's being poured into it. So there's less incentive to go find ways to fraud it. And I think that's really why you see more of the fraud right now in the UA world, which is where I think I'm a little bit more of an expert in.
And just kind of off, you mentioned that there's more money in UA, reasoning why there's fraud. If tomorrow we saw those scales just completely switch, do you have any ideas where the fraud can come in retargeting?
You know? Yeah, absolutely. So you get a list of devices. So if you could just click on those devices, there's an easy way to click spam there. I have a few ideas for ways I might be able to fight that. I don't know if we're willing to share them right now in the air. We'll see when that type of stuff actually happens. But I think that if there started to be a lot more money and interest in retargeting, I think you're going to see fraud show up there, because where there's a will, there's a way, and where there's money to be made, people will make it.
Well, for our side, hopefully not, but yeah. It sounds like right now the main focus is on UA fraud, which is what you're here to talk about. So thanks again for coming in.
Yeah, would love to understand what signals you're looking for here when you have fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I'm looking for signals in fraud, the signals are all kind of indicative of the different types of fraud, which I think are important to look at. I most commonly see really four broad categories of fraud. The first one is click spamming or click stuffing, which is when you just fire a lot of clicks out that didn't necessarily happen. The second one is click injection, which is something that got talked a lot about at conferences about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And that's when there are malicious apps that will basically fire a click at the appropriate time to try and steal credit for an install. Then you're going to see types of fraud where people basically lie to you about the type of traffic that you're getting. So you think that you're getting normal banner traffic where people are not incentivized to download your app, but in reality, those users are being paid to install your app. And so you're going to see really poor back-end data just because it's not what you think that it's going to be. And then finally is bot traffic, which is basically non-human installs. There's just machines that are going and installing the app for you.
And which one of those four is the most common that you come across?
The most common by far in mobile marketing, I think, is click spamming. It's really easy to do. You don't have to be a genius to understand how it works. Mm-hmm. And it's really common.
Besides maybe commonality, which one's the hardest to actually find and get used to seeing?
Yeah, so that depends how sophisticated the fraudsters are. They can all be really tricky. I think that click injection is kind of a newer one. There's not as much technology out there to capture that. A lot of products have been released in the last year that are going to help you find that. But each one kind of has its own nuances and probably unique to your app.
And then what do you look at within your conversion funnel that might help indicate that there's an odd behavior? Anything specific?
Yeah, we could go through the different types of fraud that I mentioned earlier and try and drill down onto each one and kind of some of the indicators you would see. Starting out with click spamming, which I mentioned is kind of the most common one. You're basically going to see a lot of clicks. Mm-hmm. You're going to see click-through rates where it's pretty hard to believe that any ad, 75% of the people who see it are going to click it. Or that for each click, less than 1% are going to install it, maybe like a tenth of or a 100th of a percent.
Right.
So those are pretty early indicators that you can see just in the dashboard of the partner that you're getting. As well as, it's not 100% true all the time. It could be that they disabled the X button. And as long as they tell you that they're doing that, it's not fraud. You just might get in trouble with some of the exchanges.
Right, right.
And then if we were to talk about click injection, that one's a little bit trickier. And to understand click injection, you kind of have to understand the flow of an install. So in mobile marketing, everyone uses attribution service providers because we don't own the landing page. The App Store, Apple owns the landing page, or Google Play owns the landing page. And so you don't actually get the data directly when someone actually clicks the install button and downloads the app.
Right.
So we rely on these attribution service providers to collect all the clicks. And then when you open up the app, that's when the quote unquote install happens. And they try to match that click to that install. So these malicious apps will basically sit there and watch for installs to happen. When the install happens, they'll fire out a click and steal the install from either someone who paid to drive it or from an organic. And what you're going to see is basically a really short click to install time, because the install timestamp actually happens when the user opens the app. So in some cases where the user downloads and immediately opens the app, you're going to see a really short, maybe 1-3 second click to install, which is basically impossible. There's no way that someone could click, install the app, and then open it within 3 seconds. That's not going to work 100% of the time. Some users might install the app, wait till the next day to open it, right? And that's just going to look like a normal install. There's no way to tell it was stolen.
Right. I think Erica was mentioning that the industry standard seems like about 30 seconds for an app to go from install to open. Is that what you see on your side?
Yeah. So I hear that a lot of conferences, people talk about the 30-second installs. I've had clients ask us why installs are happening under 30 seconds. It really depends on the app. How big is your app? Can it be downloaded in 30 seconds? Some apps can't. I know Game of War is really large. It could take up to 1-2 minutes to install, depending on your connection speed. Some other apps, like the Fidget Spinner app from Ketchup, there's not a lot of meat made to
see. My most used app on the phone, actually.
It's a great app.
And then you mentioned ASP, attribution service providers. I just want to kind of rattle off a few for people out there who might not be familiar with it, but those are your Tunes of the World, Adjust, Kochava, Singular, correct?
Absolutely. Yep.
And do they awesome. Do a good job of catching fraud, or is a lot more manual work than on the back end?
Yeah, so their tools are actually really coming together and advancing. And I think that they've kind of captured, there's a lot of demand for fraud gains out there. And if you're working with the right partners, you don't actually have that much to gain from paying for these services. Because if you're working with partners you could trust, you don't have to worry that much about it. And you could just look at the initial signals. But when you start really opening up your partner mix and your organic starts to really rise, your app becomes more popular, there's a lot more incentive for people to fraud you. Your CPIs go up as your marketing works well and your product works well. And that's when you really have to kind of watch out and possibly invest in one of these tools.
Right. And speaking about partners, what are the types of partners that you actually see have the most fraud that you should be most aware of?
Yeah, we see it all across the board. In just about every single vertical, there are ways to fraud, because it's not always the ad partner that's frauding. Sometimes it's their sources that have an incentive to basically make their traffic look better. So that way the bidding is higher there, whether that's on the Facebook ad network or whether or not that's a DSP. They can basically manipulate the unit in the ad tag to click when it shouldn't be clicked. So on and so forth. But I think that most people would agree you're going to see the most fraud in the affiliate side, where there's a lot of opacity, if you will, where you don't know what the publisher is. You don't even know what type of traffic it is.
Right.
And if you don't really follow up with questions, you could just be blindly buying fake impressions or all kinds of stuff.
Right. Could you quickly follow up and just explain exactly what an affiliate network is?
Yeah. Affiliate networks don't have the best reputation, but they're basically companies where you pay for them to go get installs and they don't really disclose their traffic sources. A lot of times it's rebroker traffic. So they go out, it's like a micro agency, if you will, and they go and they buy wherever they feel is appropriate for you. And they actually have access to a lot of really unique inventory that can't be on the sketchier side, whether it's some type of incent traffic or there are bots on Instagram that add you. And when you read the description, it tells you to go install an app if you want them to follow you for free or so on and so forth. They're really creative sometimes. And so
that's what's happening on Instagram. Okay.
Well, on that front, how do you evaluate then an ad partner to make sure that you're finding someone trustworthy to work with?
Yeah. The number one thing is I look for unique inventory sources. So if you tell me that your strategy is to make a bunch of bots that go on Tinder and start adding people and trying to get them to download my app, as long as I know that that's what you're doing, that's fine. That's a unique inventory source. I would never be able to do that on my own. Some people have their SDK in an app, and the only way to access it is via their network. What we're finding now is a lot of apps are just kind of going to exchanges now, and even some of the supply side partners are putting their inventory out on the exchange. AppLovin, for example, you can buy through them directly, but now you can buy AppLovin through all kinds of DSPs. So it kind of allows you to consolidate your buys. And the advantage of doing it through DSP is that then they see that user in all the ad networks and not just in AppLovin. So you can decide whether or not you want to bid there.
And as far as tools, I know you mentioned a couple so far in the conversation. What are the main ones that you use? Are they in-house, third party? And then for people out there who might be deciding between the two, kind of what would you recommend and how do you decide whether to do something in-house or third party?
Yeah. So when I worked at Machine Zone, they have some very state-of-the-art in-house tools that they've been working on. And they were really a leader in finding new types of fraud. So we would a lot of times be looking into types of fraud before we would ever hear about them in the industry. So when I worked there, we used a lot of in-house tools. However, when I worked on the agency, I had an opportunity to work with people that didn't have access to those tools. And so they used a lot more third-party tools. A lot of times, they're tools that are released by the attribution service providers because they have so much data they can look at. And they can look at every single click, every single install, and really aggregate data and look for abnormalities within that. Those type of tools are really powerful and really helpful. And in fact, our tools were all based on those anyway, because we need to get the data from the attribution service provider in order to determine what's fraud, what's not.
Talk to me about blacklists. When are you using them? How? Let us know more.
So blacklist is the easiest way to deal with fraud. It's not the best way, but it's the easiest. If something is clearly fraudulent, you can block it and that's the end of it. In an ideal world, you'd get a refund. However, you need evidence to get a refund. You need to be able to basically prove to the partner, because if they decide to sue you over a payment, you need to be able to prove to a court of law that what you got indeed was not what they told you it was going to be. You have to have a video of them redirecting to the app store when they said they don't do that. You have to have a video of them doing whatever have you. It becomes a lot easier if you pay them in net 30 and you haven't paid them and the amount of fraud is less than what you owe them. But that can be tricky too, especially if they're overseas or you have a relationship with that partner where you need them for their traffic.
Right. And what's that relationship like with the partner once you kind of find out, all right, they're most likely fraudulent or there's fraud going on? How do you kind of interact with them to make sure either A, you get a refund, or B, you know, this doesn't happen again moving forward?
Yeah. Well, as an analyst, you really have to buy without your emotions. So even if you know that someone is pulling the wool over your eyes, if they have quality traffic that you can narrow it down to, it's just a matter of negotiation and working out a deal with them. But if somebody commits fraud against you, the trust level definitely goes down and the amount of diligence you have to do in order to keep that partner alive is a lot higher because you know that you can't trust anything they're buying. So you have to constantly be working and that takes man hours. So it's not free. I would say that it's not always the partner's fault. Sometimes it is an ad source, but a lot of times it is the partner's fault. And if you call about on it, sometimes they'll say, hey, you caught me. Let's go forward and not do that anymore. But other times they're not so pragmatic about the situation.
Mm-hmm. And is that kind of for UA partners potentially listening to this podcast right now, and maybe they've come across, they've actually done fraud in the past. Is that what you'd recommend, is just kind of own up to it and move on from there? Is the best way to reconcile with a partner?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, if your entire business model is fraud, then sure, own up to it, right? If it's not costing you any money to buy traffic because you're not really buying traffic, yeah, then give them the refund and see if they keep buying. But I think most partners, when they do this type of stuff, it is just a small section of it, and that's how they make their margins. And so a lot of times with a lot of these affiliate networks, it's kind of like playing whack-a-mole, right? You can almost guarantee that 10% of your traffic is going to be fraud every time, because these guys, they're not the traffic source. They're buying it from someone else. So a lot of times it's out of their control and they're kind of relying on you to catch some of it. What you don't catch is kind of where they make their money.
Right.
Like I said, there's a fair amount of work that goes into it. So you just have to make that evaluation on whether or not it's worth your time in order to go ahead and get that refund so that it makes sense.
Yeah. Eric, any more questions from your side?
I guess the question I have is, if folks would want to get in touch with you to learn more about fraud, what's the best way? Finding you on LinkedIn? Is there any way to you'd want to share more?
Yeah. So foolishly, I just posted my email address and phone number on LinkedIn. So maybe after this podcast, I'll take that down. But LinkedIn's a great way to get in touch with me. My email and phone number is on the description. So if you go down that, you can email me, sam@sbruns.com. And there's a little form there. I haven't maintained the website that well, but if you have any recommendations for it, I'm happy to hear them.
Very nice. And to finish it off, the last question, just about fraud in general as a, you know, universal term. Where do you see the future in fraud going? Do you see people like you on the analyst side working for some app companies maybe just getting smarter about it and catching it quicker? Or do you see it mostly coming from the UA partner side, having to kind of solve it internally over there?
Fraud is always going to be there. The fact that people don't go to jail for it, I think, is one of the biggest issues that we have here, right? There's really no punishment. I mean, when people get caught for fraud, it's a slap on the wrist. Sometimes you get a refund. Occasionally you get sued. But there's really not that much punishment for it. So as long as there's no punishment for it and there's a lot of money to be made in it, there's going to be new fraud I've never thought of. And they're going to keep doing it. I think that one thing that could definitely end fraud overnight would be if Google Play and the App Store were willing to give you the install numbers by device ID immediately. So we weren't relying on app opens. And instead, we were just seeing when people actually hit the page and install. So they have a lot of data that I think is kind of the missing piece of the puzzle that we don't have in order to fight as much fraud as we could.
So you're saying we need an ad tech jail, right?
We need an ad tech jail. If people don't go to jail, they're going to keep doing it.
We'll open Alcatraz back up for
fraud. Prime real estate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast, Sam. Again, thanks for taking the time. Super interesting learning about fraud, which of course is one of the hottest topics in the industry right now. So it was great learning more from you, picking your brain, and we'll hopefully have you back on the podcast sometime soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks again to Sam Bruns for joining us on the podcast today. I think fraud was a great topic to start with, especially how hot it is in the market. So it was awesome to be able to pick his brain and really learn about a subject that I think everybody can learn more about.
Absolutely. And just a reminder to everyone, we work at Remerge. We do app-to-app retargeting, so helping you with everything after the download. Also, I'm at plenty of conferences in the area, so if you ever want to grab a drink, you can hit me up at erica@remerge.io, and that's Erica with a C.
Well, thank you everyone again for joining us. Again, this is the Aptivate podcast sponsored by Remerge. We'll be doing about 12 stories with mobile experts around the industry, mobile marketing experts around the industry. So definitely look forward to having you guys listen again and stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you very much.
Thanks. See you guys.